This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. On this show, we bring you a mix of local and international news, stories and commentaries produced and presented in snack-sized bites, and all with a bigger picture taste to it. And joining me today on the show are Sharmila Gunnison and Tina Carmelia. Welcome, ladies.
Hello. Thank you. Hello.
And here's what we have for today. Sharmila.
Well, first up, we have an article from The Atlantic which suggests that despite conventional ideas on healthy living, good skincare is largely available only to higher income groups, and that the way we think about this issue indicates our larger attitude towards poverty in general.
And napping on the job is generally frowned upon, but a growing number of companies are allowing their employees to take a quick snooze at work to help manage their health and improve productivity. We want to know, are you getting enough sleep and high quality sleep at that?
Yeah, and on that end, we do have a Twitter poll going on right now. You can take it at BFM Radio, and we're asking you, would better sleep improve your work performance? Yes, no, or who needs sleep? And you can also text us what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
And just to lead us into that conversation, here is the Bare Naked Ladies with Who Needs Sleep?
Busy finding meaning. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And that was the Bare Naked Ladies with Who Needs Sleep? Who needs sleep indeed, ladies? I think we all do.
I do.
And sometimes even in the afternoons, you know, during work. But we'll be discussing that story a little bit later. Before we get into our first story, Sharmila, how are things going over at Twitter?
Well, we do have a Twitter poll going on right now, exactly about the subject of who needs sleep. We're asking you, would better sleep improve your work performance? Let us know whether your answers are yes, no, or who needs sleep. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Okay, all right. And now we're going to head straight to our first story. Sharmila, that is something, again, back to you.
Well, thank you, Juliet. Well, this article that I read recently in The Atlantic really caught my interest, particularly the title. It goes, "The Best Skincare Trick is Being Rich." It talks about how the way we've been taught to think about skincare ignores issues of class and income inequality. Now, I know this may seem like a bit of a stretch from skincare to the income gap, but the article's main point is that we're often told that having good skin is as simple as doing the right thing. Eating right, sleeping well, drinking plenty of water, washing your face regularly, and so on. This, however, doesn't take into account the expensive products, treatments, dermatologists, aestheticians that all contribute to giving rich people good skin.
And more significantly, the article suggests that this feeds into the general perception that people in the lower income groups are somehow responsible for the things they cannot access. To put it simply, that if they have bad skin, it's because they are not doing something right.
Yeah, so lots to unpack in this article. So let's first look at the skincare aspect of this. We have on the line with us dermatologist Dr. Ruben Nathan, who is chairman of the Cosmetic Dermatology Board of the National Dermatological Society. Dr. Ruben, I know you've read this article as well. So is good skin something that is more available to higher income groups?
That's kind of a loaded question because the treatments that are offered, say, in Asia are more affordable. The same treatments offered in the West, where this article came from, would be more expensive. So, in a way, yes. In a way, no. I have mixed feelings about this article because it tends to assume that only the higher socioeconomic groups have access to treatments that work, and that all these treatments are expensive. So, in that regard, I'm sort of guarded in my approach to agreeing with the article and saying that, yeah, okay, you only rich people can benefit. No, I don't think that's fair. It's sort of saying that the higher socioeconomic groups would tend to have better diets and better lifestyle, would be more compliant to all those lifestyle type things that would benefit their skin. But let's not forget about all the treatments they're also getting, okay? Now, the issue is, are they benefiting entirely, mostly from the lifestyle and from the diet? Or are you giving too much credit to the treatments? I would err in the direction of saying I think you're giving too much credit to the treatment. For instance, if you see someone who's overly treated, your first impression is not, oh, wow, flawless skin. Your first impression is, oh, that person is overly treated, you know, who look, appear Botoxed and slightly in a wind tunnel. So that kind of look is not very accepted here. But it may be more accepted in the West, I'm not sure. But I don't think that's fair to say either, because I know from my colleagues also, they don't want to give the client this kind of overly done look. So it's a very nuanced issue, it's something I'm very passionate about, but it's not a simple answer, I'm afraid.
But it is true that people from lower income groups tend to find it more difficult to eat well, sleep enough, and so on. So what is the effect of this on their skin?
Stress hormones. Stress hormones and poor diet. So if you have a poor diet and you have high serum insulins, or your testosterone levels or DHEA hormone levels are higher, and you're not sleeping well, or you're smoking more, your carbon monoxide levels in the blood are higher, these things will give you a duller complexion, will open your pores, will not contribute to you looking well in general, yes.
So it does seem like Dr. Rubin is slightly on the fence about this article.
Yes.
But I think some of his points are definitely well made. Is the article perhaps giving too much credit to something like treatments and the role of skincare? However, I think the fact that these things can be very expensive is not something that we can run away from.
Yeah, and it's true that, you know, skincare can be expensive. And I'm not even talking about the kinds of expensive treatments that celebrities and, you know, the really wealthy get done. But even a regular skincare regime, which I can attest to, with cleansers and creams and, you know, all of that. This really costs quite a bit.
Yeah, and what the article does, it actually points out that wealthy models and celebrities, as well as the media that reports on them, like beauty magazines and so on, tend to underplay just how much money goes into making their skin look the way it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the article says that most beauty editors and writers, as well as the women featured, are well aware that their skin looks the way it does because of youth, genetics, as well as expensive products, treatments and cosmetic dermatology procedures that very few people outside their world could ever hope to experience. But this isn't what is shared to the world.
Mm. Yeah, and the article uses the example of a 2016 survey of 17 Victoria's Secret models who praised lifestyle habits like drinking water and exercising, both things which I do and I don't look like them, and others credited their skin to things like inexpensive pore strips, which I do use as well. Apparently I'm failing at this. However, what they didn't mention was a specific spa that manages Victoria's Secret model skincare, where the facials cost, you know, about $200 US, and treatments like LED light beds are available.
The article also highlights the fact that many of these models can have a whole range of skincare products that can add up to hundreds of dollars.
Yes, and yet when articles are written about their skincare regime, it's often made to sound like all that it takes to achieve such flawless skin is a matter of making good lifestyle choices. And this is problematic for several reasons, because it doesn't take into account that not everyone can even afford to make those choices in the first place.
Yeah, even if we leave aside these expensive skin treatments, not everyone can make lifestyle choices that allow for glowing skin. As the Atlantic article says, only some people have access to a diet of fresh fruits and vegetables. Only some people have the kinds of jobs with steady schedules that allow for a good night's sleep, and only some people can drink the water that comes out of their faucet.
Right, exactly. And, you know, when all of that relates back to the point that a lot of these things are things that especially people in the lower income group cannot do without making a significant compromise in the things that are more important in their lives. The article argues that by glossing over these factors, we tend to arrive at the simplistic conclusion, and we actually tend to do this about many things when it comes to people in lower income groups, that if you don't take care of your skin, it's because something is wrong with the things that you do, that there's something wrong with your character, that you're just not doing the right things. Here's a clip from a TED Talk that history and economics author Rutger Bregman gave in 2017 about how we so often equate the issues related to poverty with character failings.
I'd like to start with a simple question. Why do the poor make so many poor decisions? I know it's a harsh question, but take a look at the data. for borrow more, save less, smoke more, exercise less, drink more, and eat less healthfully. Why? Well, the standard explanation was once summed up by the British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and she called poverty a personality defect. A lack of character, basically. Now, I'm sure not many of you would be so blunt. But the idea that there's something wrong with the poor themselves is not restricted to Mrs. Thatcher. Some of you may believe that the poor should be held responsible for their own mistakes. And others may argue that we should help them to make better decisions. But the underlying assumption is the same. There's something wrong with them. If we could just change them. If we could just teach them how to live their lives. If they would only listen.
Yeah, so this is actually rhetoric that we hear fairly often when it comes to the low-income groups, isn't it? That they should just try harder, that it's somehow a failure on their part, rather than a systemic issue that we actually need to address.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not rich, I'm not a celebrity, I don't, you know, I'm not a Victoria's Secret model, but yeah, I've had to deal with skin issues fairly recently, long-term treatment, very expensive drugs. Unfortunate in that I have insurance coverage by, you know, the company, by, and also my personal one, once I run out of that, because it is that expensive. And you know, it's a lot of effort, not just economically, but, you know, it's your time, it's your energy, it's all of that.
Mm. And I think things like time and energy and even effort are things that we, who are perhaps more privileged, tend to overlook when it comes to people who are in the low income earning bracket, because those are just things that they cannot afford. It's not just a matter of how much money you can spend on something. It's also a matter of, do you have the energy at the end of the day to do it?
Yeah.
Can you, even something as simple as eating the right food, you know, it can sound incredibly easy to us to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, but it's not necessarily something that everyone can afford to do all the time, nor do they have the time to make sure that they and their family get that kind of nutrition.
Yeah, and you know, even when it comes to things like healthy food, for example, we all know that that always falls into the expensive bracket.
Exactly.
You know, those foods that will good for your skin, you know, this type of nuts or this type of vegetable or, you know, whatever it is, this drink, that it's all expensive and in the organic section, which, you know, not all of us can afford on a regular basis.
Right. And I mean, there's also this thing called scarcity mentality, which basically says that how the very condition of being poor can actually affect one's decision of making, can actually affect one's decision-making process, and therefore the kinds of choices that you make, which means that being, you know, in a lower economic, the lower down you are, the more difficult it becomes to make the kind of choices that could help perhaps improve your life. And so Rutger Bergman actually touches on this in his talk as well.
It turns out that people behave differently when they perceive a thing to be scarce. And what that thing is doesn't much matter, whether it's not enough time, money, or food. You all know this feeling. When you've got too much to do, or when you've put off breaking for lunch and your blood sugar takes a dive. You know, this narrows your focus to your immediate lack, to the sandwich you've got to have now, the meeting that's starting in 5 minutes, or the bills that have to be paid tomorrow. So the long-term perspective goes out the window. You could compare it to a new computer that's running 10 heavy programs at once. It gets slower and slower, making errors. Eventually it freezes, not because it's a bad computer, but because it has too much to do at once. Now, the poor have the same problem. They're not making dumb decisions because they are dumb, but because they're living in a context in which anyone would make dumb decisions. So suddenly, I understood why so many of our anti-poverty programs don't work. Investments in education, for example, are often completely ineffective. Poverty is not a lack of knowledge.
I think that's an excellent point, which addresses that idea that poverty in itself is not a failing of knowledge or a failing of character, and that a lot of these issues, when we talk about just do something to improve your life, often assumes that they are just not doing it because they don't want to.
Yeah. They're lazy or, you know, whatever, those terrible things that people... Yeah.
We did have a WhatsApp come in which talks about, you know, good skin. This is... I can't tell whether it's a he or a she, but they say that their WhatsApp says, good skin is only for the wealthy. Good skin is only for the wealthy. Try having a skin tag removed. It's not offered by government hospitals because it's a quote-unquote cosmetic procedure and private doctors charge at least 500 ringgit to fire up a laser. Mm-hmm. I think this kind of relates to what Tina was talking about earlier as well, right? That often a lot of these procedures can be really expensive and quite out of reach for many people.
Yeah. And I think it's not been taken so seriously if we're talking specifically about skin health, because usually it's not a matter of life or death. You know, it's quality of life, actually. You know, you could be in pain. It could affect your performance at work because of your lack of confidence or self-consciousness. It's all of that. So it's more of quality of life rather than life-threatening. Mm-hmm, so it isn't taken as seriously as other health conditions.
And so can often, as the person who messaged and said, it's often not covered by plans or even sometimes by government hospitals.
Yeah, I mean, just my young daughter, like when she was just about after 1 year old, she had terrible eczema. And, you know, the thousands of ringgit I had to spend just to, you know, send her for tests to find out what it is. And I mean, she's got scars from, you know, all that eczema, which, I mean, okay, I'm not going to do much about it. But, you know, those are scars that she's going to have to live with. And again, it cost a lot of money and put her through a lot of unnecessary tests.
I mean, I know we started off talking about skin, but the reason I found this article in The Atlantic so interesting is actually because it reflects on the way we approach the income gap in general. And, you know, when we talk about people who either live in poverty or are in the lower economic group, I thought this was a really interesting way to approach the way we think about what they, you know, who they are and how they would approach things.
Yeah, and you know, I like the closing paragraph from the article. Excuse me. Mainstream beauty media continues to aggregate the tips and tricks of the young and wealthy, usually without questioning the larger picture. If everyone admitted that skincare is primarily a function of wealth, then they'd have to grapple with who has money and what we assume and expect of those who don't.
Exactly. And I think that often when it comes to issues involving the wealth gap and poverty, it is all too easy to lay the blame on everything else except to try and address those gaps in the first place.
Yes. God forbid. Anyway, so what's happening over at Twitter, Sharmila? How is our poll going?
Well, we have a poll about sleep, and we're asking you guys, would better sleep improve your work performance? Just very quickly, we have 88% of people saying yes, better sleep would improve their work performance. 2% say no, and I'm very impressed by them. Oh, 3% actually said no, and I'm very impressed. 9% says, who needs sleep? Clearly a fan of the Bare Naked Ladies there.
So yeah, we are going to be talking a little bit after this break about, you know, the need for sleep and whether napping at work, you know, might be beneficial for you. So we will take a quick break now. But before that, here's Celebrity Skin by Hole. You're tuned into The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.